Hi everyone, and welcome to Tech Talk. I'm here at Barcelona with my colleagues Grigori Melnick and David L. My name is Ajoy Krishnamurthy. I'm a product founder at Microsoft Patterns and Practices. Grigori, tell us about yourself.
Hello world, I am Grigori and I'm a program manager at Patterns and Practices, and I have enterprise library and testing guidance as well as guidance automation in my portfolio of projects.
Okay, David?
I'm David Hill, I'm an architect in Patterns and Practices. My responsibility is to look after the technical direction of all of the projects and to help out where I can.
Great, so for those of you that have been following Patterns and Practices, we are a small group within developer division, as you know. We primarily provide guidance, both narrative guidance and code-based guidance for building .NET applications or building custom applications using Microsoft platform. We've got enterprise library, as you said, in our portfolio, application architecture guide, SharePoint guidance, composite application guidance using WPF and Silverlight and whatnot. So one of the things, David, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about is the application architecture guidance.
Yeah.
What's going on with that?
Yeah. So people may know that we published the first edition in 2002, a long time ago. And we're working on version 2 of that now. It's been a long time coming, but we're happy to be doing that work, and it's generated a lot of interest. And the architecture guide really is meant to give people an overview of the Microsoft platform, help them think about the different technologies that they might choose to build their applications. One of the things, the key things that we're doing in the guide is to describe application archetypes, which are the canonical type of applications that you get. I talk about them in terms of the patterns, the design patterns, the technologies that you might use. Really, the goal is to give folks an idea of the kind of application that they need to solve their business problem, and then they should have a pretty good understanding of the technologies and the patterns that they need to go look at to build that application and be successful.
Gotcha. So as you said, the landscape is much different than when we did the first version of the guide. One of the common questions that we hear a lot is around cloud computing. We talked about Windows Azure at PDC 2 weeks ago, and then today, or this week at TechEd Barcelona. What about the cloud? I mean, is it part of the AppOr guide, or are we doing anything else with the cloud computing space?
So the cloud is very interesting. We think it's going to be really important going forward. It's definitely an area that we're going to be investing in. We're starting to look at the space now. It's a little bit too early for us to get involved in terms of delivering best practice guidance, but we're definitely forming a community around that to understand three things, really. That we need to understand what kind of applications people are building on for the cloud. We need to understand what challenges they're facing when they do that, so that we can provide guidance to help them overcome those challenges. And we're also looking and working very closely with the product teams to figure out the technologies involved. A lot of these are very new, nascent technologies. A lot of them are very interesting, but they're still evolving a little bit. So we're working very closely with them to try and figure out exactly how this will settle out over the next 12 months or so. So in that kind of time frame, about 12 months, we're going to be getting more and more deeply involved, and we're going to be doing guidance for the cloud, really trying to help people to move to the cloud, kind of like an enterprise library for the cloud. How do you deal with all those cross-cutting concerns? The cloud has a lot of the same issues, but it also has a lot of new issues. So we're going to be definitely working in that space to help people get their applications into the cloud, and also to integrate their applications with services that might be hosted in the cloud.
Right. So that's great to hear. So you talked about the new issues and scenarios that might pop up and whatnot, but the consumption aspect is still relevant. I mean, that's here to stay around the client and rich client, RHEA and whatnot. And PNP has got a long legacy with the composite application block,
at
the Smart Client Software Factory and so on. I heard that you have a project called the Composite Application Guidance for WPF.
You mean Prism.
Yeah, exactly, Prism. Yeah, that's right. That's an inside joke, I guess, now. So tell us more about Prism. Right, so you know, what is Prism V1, or Composite Application Guidance for WPF, and then what's Prism V2 around Silverlight, and what's the future look like?
I can talk about that. So the interesting thing is, it doesn't matter how good your backend is. If you don't have a good user experience, the users can't use your application, then you know, you may as well not have bothered, almost.
Sure.
So I think user experience is increasingly important. You know, Microsoft have come out with WPF and Silverlight, and we have some guidance to help people build applications for those platforms, composite applications, loosely coupled, very modular applications, called Prism, as you say. We released version 1 in July this year, and that helps people build applications, composite applications for WPF. We're actually working on version 2 now, and we're extending Prism and the patterns that it contains to include not just WPF but also Silverlight, so you'll be able to build composite rear applications as well as desktop applications. And the key thing there is that you can actually, because of the we have .NET on Silverlight, and we have .NET on WPF, and Silverlight being a subset of WPF, you can actually build applications that share a lot of the code and the business logic between those two. So you can build applications that deliver a full-featured desktop experience and a lighter weight rear-based experience.
Gotcha. So what about the whole mobile scenario?
Well, definitely it's been announced that Silverlight will be available on mobile devices. When that's available, we're going to be extending Prism to include the mobile space as well, to be able to use the same skills and the same patterns and the same code on all three of those different platforms.
That's perfect. It's perfect. So when we talk about the cloud, the new service infrastructure, and all the client and whatnot, I don't think we can take our eyes off of the cross-cutting concerns. That's where, Grigori, you come into picture, I guess.
Those are still there.
Yeah, the big Apple, yeah. I guess, the enterprise library, covering a lot of the scenarios with policy injection and data access, even to start at the primitive level. So
exactly.
Tell us more about what's going on with this enterprise library.
So the past, the present, and the future. The enterprise library has been around for a while. It's the most successful asset of patterns and practices as of now, and it's going to be there tomorrow. It's going to be there in a year. It's going to be there further along. We are really thinking about enterprise library long term, and we have a lot of serious planning going on right now for the vNext. We just shipped version 4.1 a couple weeks ago, and we are starting our effort to investigate and do the complete sweep of scenarios of Enterprise Library for the next version. Because in the last several years, what was happening is that we kept adding new scenarios and adding new stuff, and the Enterprise Library grew and grew, and now it's time to kind of step back, or actually step up, and to evaluate and look at it over and see, you know, whether all of those scenarios are still relevant. If they are, is there any kind of new support that the platform provides? In fact, in many cases there is, so we may need to go and to modify the type of guidance that we are providing around certain cross-cutting concerns.
Gotcha.
We added a dependency injection container and promote the DI style of development that will help you build your loosely coupled applications recently.
So where does DI, the Unity, goes from here with work on MF, for example?
Yeah.
How does those fit together?
Well, at this point, the Unity is a lightweight, standalone, generic dependency injection container. It's just that. It does support now, with version 4.1, interception as well, but that's what it is. MEF, Managed Extensibility Framework, is really more about extensibility and extensibility of Visual Studio, extensibility of other applications. So we will be looking at the integration story and seeing how those two will co-evolve.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's actually one of the things that we'll be looking in V5.
Okay.
Other things that we will have to take care of is, again, going and doing the sweep of the existing blocks, looking at the new technologies that are coming from Microsoft and seeing how we can integrate with them. So one other example would be the caching block and the velocity. So very likely there will be velocity providers for the caching block.
Right.
And the whole idea that we want to get the enterprise library leaner and cleaner, and that's something that been on our plate for a while, but again, we were too obsessed with adding new features, and we want to make sure that this time we really get it to the point of being very lean.
You're going to make the enterprise library leaner, cleaner, but not meaner.
No.
So in your introduction, you talked about the work around testing guidance.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, testing guidance is a new area for patterns and practices. Actually, not quite new. We did have testing guidance on performance testing for web apps in the past, and some security testing and testing of the application blocks a long time ago. So, but this is a new area where we approach testing from a perspective of acceptance testing. In other words, how do you know that your software is ready for your customers, and how can they accept your software? What kind of practices are appropriate? What should they do? What we do, we provide a three parts guide, where in the first part there are models that help you think and conceptualize acceptance testing. in general, and then you get the concrete practices in part two, and then you get illustrations of how those concrete practices are applied on a sample app, on the big sample app, in part three.
Gotcha.
So we released the beta again about 2 weeks ago. It's available on Codeplex, codeplex.com/testingguidance. And we will welcome feedback from anybody who cares to read about it. So
right. That's great. So talking about these type of practices, right? We pride ourselves, we parents and practices, in being agile. And the teams within parents and practices are using several of these agile techniques from extreme programming and Scrum and whatnot. So in fact, Aid Miller, one of our colleagues, put out a distributed agile development white paper.
He did, yeah.
Just shout out to the Agile Showcase, where you will start, you know, seeing a lot more videos and content around some of our collective learnings on doing iteration planning, stand-ups actually doing with the distributed team on different time zones and whatnot. That's
test-driven development, acceptance test-driven development, continuous integration. Those are all the practices that we've adopted internally and that we are reaping the benefits of, and we really want to share the learnings of how we did that, you know, in our own team with the rest of the world. So.
Perfect. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. That actually brings to the end of the Tech Talk today. Thanks for joining us. You can find more about Parents and Practices at msdn.microsoft.com/practices. Thank you.